You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Well, I'm very excited today to have two special guests with us. Georgia Dow from iMore.com. Georgia, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jim Young is also here. He's the principal UX designer at Dell. And Jim, thanks for joining us too.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Stephen.
Awesome. I thought it'd be interesting, the two of you, because George, I think on the last iMore show, you were very positive on the Apple Watch. I know you said you're loving it. So I want to get that perspective. And Jim, being a UX designer, thought it'd be interesting to get your perspective too. But before we get into that, very important that we discuss, at least shortly, the Avengers Age of Ultron movie. I know both of you saw it. And I didn't read a lot of comic books, like when I was a kid or now, but I love all the Marvel movies and everything like that. And I just was curious what you guys thought. George, I mean, what did you think, new Avengers movie?
So I'm a huge superhero fan. So I was going into it and I'd heard such great reviews from it. I enjoyed it, but I can't say that I loved it. I think that I think that the pacing was a little bit quick and... Mm-hmm. I also found that sometimes they over-explain things to you, like you shouldn't already understand it. And movies have lost their subtlety, which sometimes makes me sad. And then there were the way that they treated Scarlett Johansson's character, Black Widow, I was a little bit disappointed with as a female. Because they just overplayed a little bit of her sexuality and made her seem a little bit overdone. I don't know.
Do you think, like, there was a couple scenes where they like flash back to almost her origin story, which we hadn't seen yet, I don't think, in a Marvel movie. I mean, do you think that was interesting, or do you think that was kind of still just weird?
I liked hearing about what made her who she is and what gave her such like trust issues with people. And like, I'm a psychotherapist by day. And so that made sense to me that she wouldn't trust people after that. But then it didn't make sense that she would be so overly coming after someone every single movie she's hitting on someone. And I'm like, okay, it's been played up so much. Shouldn't she more be luring people to her, but not actually have any emotional attachment to them? And so I would have liked if they were a little more subtle with that. But I like the flashbacks. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And for having trust issues, to trust the Hulk, you know, and all those, you know, this is going to be spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, you know, maybe you want to fast forward a little bit. Spoiler alert.
Skip ahead.
Yeah.
Skip.
But those scenes between her and the Hulk, you know, which are kind of interesting moments, you know.
When she opens up and she Hulk whispers, that was amazing. I loved that. I thought that was great and it was perfect. Like, he has trust issues with himself. She has trust issues with others. It made sense, kind of, that there would be some sort of attraction. So she like takes off her glove and she opens up her hand and she like he puts his hand in hers. I loved that. I thought that was great.
Cool. And
then they treated her poorly after. I don't know. Maybe spoke about her.
I won't say exactly what it is in case anyone is still listening, so it's not a spoiler. But the end made me pretty sad between the two of them. I thought that was very poignant.
Yes.
At the end, so I'll save it if you haven't seen it.
I
agree. I mean, I was thinking about the first Avengers movie compared to this one, and I remember just a lot more fondly, a lot more of the scenes and a lot more of the development of those characters. And I feel like there were more situations where you see the characters challenged with their own abilities. I think of like when Loki traps Thor in the glass cage and they drop him out of the ship. Like, it's a high stakes moment. It's intense, and you're like, I don't know, you see them kind of in their humanity almost in that situation. Or, you know, Captain America had dangling off the side of the airship, you know, when he's trying to help Iron Man. So, I remember like all those scenes very fondly. And I feel like in the new one, it was fun to watch. You know, there's a lot of action, obviously, and it's, you know, fun to see.
Yeah, and still some great scenes.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I feel I saw it with my wife, and the first scene, you know, it's tons of action, all the stuff going on, but it was almost like, obviously it's a lot of CG, but it almost felt like too CG-ish in that first scene, like stuff
the opening
moving.
You're absolutely right, and that bothered me because it was the opening scene. I think that if it was later on in the movie, the exact same scene, it wouldn't have bothered me as much. But coming in, when I could tell that the way that the car bumped was off, the lighting that hit everyone was off, each, you know, animated object that they used was a little bit off, I was like, You know, we remember beginnings and endings mostly, and, and they're prominent in our minds. So to begin a movie with such little thought to how much, you know, overproduction and underlook at the quality of realism.
And it's my wife leaned over. She was like, I feel like I'm watching a cartoon. And that's kind of how I felt. And not that it would be bad as a cartoon, but like it's real live action. So it's weird to see it in a cartoonish atmosphere.
And most of these things you could do without having CGI.
Right.
You know, like most of, you can't do the Hulk at all. But actually, Dave Wiskus, we did a review cast on Avengers just a little while ago. And Dave Wiskus brought up a great idea. Is he had actually thought in the movie that they were going to pull back and it was going to be a video game that people were playing of the Avengers, which I thought would have been a nice tie-in. It would have been why it looked so CGI. You still would have gotten that cool feature in that scene, which was amazing, of all of them jumping out, and you see all of them in a span in one scene, and then it freezes to begin. I thought that would have worked out really nicely.
Because they end the first Avengers with, like, you know, all the kids getting face paint of the Avengers and the T-shirts. So that could have fit in nicely. Anyway, well, Jim, what did you think? What did you think of it?
Wow, it's amazing. You guys are able to process out all these details.
You don't have to.
I liked it. I liked it overall. Georgia, I totally resonate with you as far as, you know, I didn't love it. When I compared this to Avengers, Avengers just flowed better. The story was more compelling. They took the time that was necessary to kind of develop the tension between characters when there was tension, and then the synergy between them when there was synergy. So I just felt like the flow really was just immaculate. It was just so well done, and it just kept me engaged throughout. Whereas this one was just like, let's get everything we can in there, and the story felt like there was a flow to the story, but it just had certain. It just wasn't smooth. It just it was like on and off. Yeah. It felt a little herky jerky jerky at times. And so, I liked it. And now another thing too that happened to me that may have not happened to you guys is I went on the first night and it was a packed theater and it was a noisy theater. So I have problems like really kind of honing in and enjoying a movie fully when there's a lot of kind of background noise and people are making comments and stuff, which sometimes annoys me, but depending on how loud they are. But so that may have been part of the reason why I didn't enjoy it more than I did. But all in all, I did enjoy it, and it was good to have my son there with me to check it out. He loved it. He absolutely loved it. I mean, he couldn't get enough of it.
How old is your son?
My son is 11.
Right. Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right, though, about the pacing. There's some scenes that I was like, okay, hurry up. Like, I'm just, like, the love scene between, Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow, and the Hulk.
Right. In the house.
When they're back at the house. I was like, oh, you know, and they're talking. And I'm just, they went on for way too long with that. And then other scenes were, like, perfectly paced, which was, I loved the scene where they were trying to lift Thor's hammer. And that was just delightful, and it was cute. And they were just, do superheroes do when they're not? Right. Like being superheroes.
And then I was just going to mention, too, I loved Vision in this movie.
Did you?
Introducing a new character. Well,
really?
I liked, I forget who acted it. I liked his personality. I like how he came across. I like how he was the opposite, not the opposite, but comparing to Ultron, that he was like the more human side. He was more in touch of the writer side of morality, and he kind of understood you can't just wipe out humanity to write it, you know, that, I don't know. I thought he was kind of a fun character. And I like the when him and Ultron get in, you know, encounter each other toward the end. But you didn't like Vision? It was, didn't
I? I am strongly disliked Vision. I don't read the comic books. So I don't know if that would have changed my feeling of him. Mm. But he was like, here he is. He's just born and there he is, doing his thing in all red and stuff.
Yeah, that was.
He reminded me similar of like Data on Star Trek, which I don't like the Next Generation. I don't like Data either. It's a similar kind of character, and he's all goody good, and I'm like, that's kind of dull to me.
you mentioned the scene with the hammer, you know, earlier when they were trying to pick it
up.
That was
cute.
It was cute. And then, you know, Vision hands Thor the hammer later, and it's like,
that was cute.
That's a good moment.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was great.
Why they could trust him, right? So that could have been hours long of why not to trust him. But that, you know, he must be worthy because he picked up the hammer. I'm like, they're like, okay, well, he's good with me. And I'm like, okay, that is cute.
I
like that he's part Jarvis, or like I right. like that.
I thought the interaction between
but I like Jarvis better. I don't know.
I did like Jarvis better. I wish he would come back. I feel like the whole Iron Man, like during the last fight scene without Jarvis, is like missing something.
Yeah.
It's strange because he's not a person, like he's not a character, but like just his voice with Tony Stark is like a dynamic that I watched. You know, I watched the ending of the first Avengers after I saw Ultron, and I was like, oh, it's cool to, I don't know, hear Tony Stark and Jarvis together. But I thought the scene with Ultron and Vision at the end, you know, which
yeah,
you know how it ends. I thought that was
yeah
poignant. You know, it was an
yeah,
ending.
Yeah, that was.
I will say, yeah. I think the ending to the first Avengers was more cathartic, like with Tony Stark and he takes the nuclear missile and, you know, he's maybe sacrificing himself. Like, I don't know. I feel like the ending was a little more satisfying maybe than the new one. But I like James Spader, his voice anyway.
I liked him. Ultron. Some people feel very pushed by, you know, Ultron. I loved the opening scene where you first see Ultron and he's all a mash of metal that he's tried to build himself, this like body.
That is cool, yeah.
And that was really creepy. And I was like, that's creepy, scary. Wow. That was great.
it was very, very scary. Well, I hope, I don't know. I hope this is not a sign of the third and fourth one, because I think those are coming out in 2018 or something like that.
Yeah.
But I hope they return. Again, the first one, I think, set a high bar. You know, like the death of Agent Coulson and things like that. I think we're
poignant.
A lot more heartfelt than kind of
absolutely in the
newer one. But we'll see. I just want to talk about it.
It'll be more interesting too, because I wonder how the dynamics will change when you have Joss Whedon, who's not going to be doing any additional Avengers, and I believe the directors that worked on Captain America: Winter Soldier are going to take the helm. So it'll be interesting how the story kind of unfolds with them at the helm as directors. It'll be interesting to see.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked the directing of. I don't like Captain America as a character. No, he's very much Superman for me.
Yeah.
Because Superman is so good, there's not. I think that our interesting parts of us are the gray areas where we have to make difficult decisions. It's really easy for him to make decisions. He's just going to always do, you know, what is the proper thing to do, which to me is less dynamic as a character. That's why I like Batman and Tony Stark better. I loved the movie. I thought the movie Captain America was really well done. So
yeah, I do too.
We can hope. And there wasn't any of that silly toilet humor that was in Age of Ultron, which I thought brought it down in caliber a little bit, like when Bruce Banner fell upon Scarlett Johansson's chest, and when Iron Man said, you know, well, I hope that, you know, you and Hulk weren't playing hide the zucchini. I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah, that's
true.
Are
we 12? Are we 12 now?
And it's because my kids are 6 years old and two now. And we've seen the Avengers a number of times, the first one at home. And after my wife and I saw this one, we saw it by ourselves. We're like, I don't know if they can watch it yet. Like, I don't know if they're old enough, because I don't know. There were just some things, like, I think Ultron might be a little scary. There were some times, like, with the Scarlet Witch, you know, when she did some kind of mind things and some of those visions. I don't know if you know, younger kids can handle as much as they could the first one.
Right.
That's just my kids, and just I think the kind of things that may affect them. But I thought it was interesting. It seemed a little more like you're saying, a little more that humor that's kind of off color. And also there were some more creepier things that I don't think make it as friendly as maybe the first one.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
So I have you here because we need to talk about the Apple Watch, of course. And Georgia, I heard your appearance on Twit yesterday, which was an awesome show.
Thank you.
Congrats on being on there. That's very cool.
I know. I was so excited.
That is awesome. That is a tent pole, or like, you know, goal of many people, but I was surprised.
I didn't even see it as a goal. I just figured I would never do it. So
well, there you go.
Wow. What am I doing here? Yeah.
No, it was awesome. You did great on it, and it was an awesome cast. I love O'Docta on the show. He's pretty cool. I was surprised how down Leo was on the watch. In general, like, he's just straight does not like it at all. But anyways, there's a couple of specific things that I think are interesting. And we've talked about it on the Apple Insider, the other episodes. And I know you've talked about it on iMore. So anyway, I got the iPhone 6 Plus in the fall. I wanted the big one. I love it. It's great.
Do you put it in your pocket?
Well, here's the thing. I did before. I carried it in my pocket. I don't wear skinny jeans, so it's easier for me. But I do. I love the battery life. I love the bigger screen. I loved everything about it. I never had any qualms with it. And then when I got the watch, I told myself even before it came, I was like, I want to try and not have the phone on me or around me as much. And I have a mod from This Is Ground. It's like an iPad all case and all that kind of stuff. And it has an iPhone pocket in it. So I keep it in there as much as I can. And when I'm home, I put my phone in the bedroom and I don't even carry it on me.
That's and great. Good yeah, for you.
And it's, I mean, sometimes I still get it and check Twitter. So, you know, I'm not perfect. But I do it on purpose because...
Oh, that's horrible. You see, we expect perfection here.
I know. But in doing that, you know, the watch, again, there's lots of things not great about it. You know, third-party apps, and there's some other things we talk about. But as far as being distraction-free, I feel like it's helped me. It's helped me not be tied to the phone, been able to keep it, you know, away. And then when I interact with my kids or other, or, you know, just at dinner or whatever, like to not have the phone on me has been good. And now the iPhone 6 Plus, I finally feel like maybe it is kind of big. You know, I never thought that before, but now I do. So I'm curious if you guys have experienced that as far as, has it helped minimize being distracted or being dependent on the phone?
Okay, well, I'll give you from my perspective. So yeah. My phone actually is never actually like it's on, but it has no beeping, buzzing, ringing. It does nothing.
Right.
It will, you know, show me notifications when I go to my phone. So it's not a huge distraction for me. But when I need to use my phone, you know, having to call someone, having to check something, it's really nice to, because it's in my purse, it's hard to find, I hate opening it. And so it's absolutely amazing that, you know, I got a alert actually for this podcast, and just to remind me, get ready. And I had the alert, the phone is the alarm's going off, and I could turn it off on my watch. And I'm like, oh, I don't have to find where my phone is and walk to it, and it beeps and you're stressed out. Amazing. Yeah. Plus, I don't miss phone calls because my phone makes no noise. So usually I'll miss every single phone call, but it will, the Taptic Engine will alert me and let me know there's a phone call and I can take a look and do I want to answer it or not. And I love that. That has freed me up to be able to not, it saved me time and stress throughout the day, which is, I think, just, it just relaxed me.
So you say your phone doesn't alert you to anything. Like, do you mean like, so nothing, even like VIP alerts or anything, like you have nothing?
I do not have any VIP alerts. I do. It does alert me to alarms.
Alarms. Yeah. So it's all the stuff you set. Like basically whenever someone tries to contact you, nothing really happens.
Nothing really happens. Like it's there and I don't want to be a slave to my phone.
Right.
So I want, like, you know, if I'm at a movie, I'm at the movie. If I'm having dinner, I'm having dinner. And if it's an emergency, you know, I have notifications on my watch and it'll tell me if there's a phone call and if there's an alarm. That's it.
Yeah.
It's all I have that will bug me.
Were you?
And the rest, it's just me.
And I try to, that's very good. aspirational, certainly, for myself. But that's really interesting. I'm trying to get over this now. So your phone does nothing. Now I'm trying to think maybe I should do this. Did you ever find yourself, I guess when you do check your phone, and, you know, this is what probably many of us struggle with, those of us who care whether or not we're completely involved in our phones, like when you go to your phone to actually check something, whether it be email or text, you feel like you kind of get sucked down into the whirlpool of Twitter and then all this other kind of stuff. And does maybe the watch help relieve that somewhat?
It's kind of funny. I don't have Twitter on my watch. I don't use it there. Like for messages, I'll just answer the messages and they're quick and easy.
Yeah.
But yes, for Twitter, I'll get sucked into a Twitter loop because my thought process is that if you've sent me a message on Twitter, and that's very kind and thoughtful for you to do that and takes time out of your day, it is only right for me to reply to you. So if I get, like, you know, something big happens or something really popular and I get like 60 replies, I will reply to every single one of the 60 replies. And I get kind of stuck in this like Twitter, like vortex of, you know, politesse. But I don't mind that. So that's why I only go to Twitter when I have a few moments to be able to do that. And if not, you know, I'm just in and out. I tweet in like, you know, every 10 hours. So like if you reply, I'll reply to you in like 10 hours.
Right. Which is funny. Well, when I tweeted at you for this,
yeah,
I didn't hear back and I was like, I shouldn't have even asked or whatever. And then like I got a tweet, like it was late, I think, or something. I was like, oh, it's hours after. Maybe it was just a long time after. I was like, what in the world?
Yeah.
So, well, that explains the mystery.
Right.
I will say, Twitter on the watch is not good.
No way.
But I do want to say Twitterific is the only way you can tweet from the watch. So I put that on the watch for no notifications or to check the timeline, but to actually dictate tweets in Twitterific, which is pretty cool. So, just want to throw that because I wanted to tweet the other day and I had my phone in the other room and I'm like, I don't want to get, because then the same thing, if you go to tweet something, then you're going to check it a bunch. So I put Twitterific on the watch, dictated a tweet, and I was off. So that's pretty cool. So good on Twitterific for that. And I'm hoping Tweetbot will update for that soon too. Jim, do you find the watch helps you be less distracted or more, or what has been your experience?
No, I love it. I think it's great because it basically takes everything that only takes a few seconds on the phone and kind of pulls it onto my wrist. And so it's quick response. There's nothing that you kind of linger doing on the watch. And I think it's great. So that convenience is really, really great for me. And so being able to just, you know, acknowledge something that's come through as a notification and then dismiss it. I love that, to be able to do it on the watch. And I too have this iPhone 6 Plus. So I, you know, the larger screen, it's in my pocket, or if it's sitting on the desk, it's great to not have to be so tied to it or to use it for the things that only take a few seconds as opposed to a few minutes, right, to use. And where the phone can also kind of suck you in and you get kind of distracted and you do other things as well in addition to respond to that notification, the watch doesn't do that. The watch keeps you kind of isolated to that one thing, and then you know you dismiss it or you respond to it, and then you're done and you move on. So I think in that sense it does help to kind of minimize the length of the distractions, and you know it makes it a little more manageable for me at least. So I actually think it's great at doing that. I've heard it said, you know, while you work on your laptop when you have hours of work to do, you grab your smartphone when you have minutes of stuff to do. And then the watch kind of fits in this spot, this really great spot where things like glances and notifications only take seconds to do.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I think that's a great example of like the way to use what the watch is good at and what it is there for. If you need to send out like emails and that, you're not going to, you shouldn't be using your watch. No. That's not what it's there for.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and I think that's why Leo was a little bit more unhappy with it, was that, you know, he was wanting to be able, he wants a longer interaction with it, which I think that the watch is going to get better at as we get more third party applications that have had more time to make better with.
Right.
I like the fact that it's like quick and easy and it separates me from my technology.
Yeah.
So if you want more of your technology, this is just, it's just a conduit. You know, this is like the little tiny shuttlecraft to your spaceship. If you're going to go into battle, you're going to take the spaceship. This is just the shuttlecraft.
Yeah. Like with the iPhone, when we saw it introduced, you know, multi-touch and the accelerometer and technologies like that were exciting when the iPhone first came out. But even just now, like with Research Kit and some of the apps, only now are we seeing some even deeper use cases, like where you can blow into the microphone of your phone and it can, you know, register what kind of your asthma, like they have the apps for that. Or even, you know, with tremors on the touch screen, it can measure a tremor using multi-touch on the phone. And I feel like in that sense, technologies even 8 years ago that were cool, but now they're showing like real purpose. I think it's going to be the same thing with a watch. I think it's introducing technologies that are cool, things like force touch and having a device like this on your wrist all the time. It has cool features now, but I think, again, you give it years and it's really going to show some maturity and show some usefulness. You know, one thing too, I mean, Apple Pay for me is still magical on the watch. I don't know how often you guys have gotten to do it, but I used it on my 6 Plus, obviously, a lot, but sometimes I found it didn't work. I pulled my phone away too fast, or the Touch ID wasn't perfect. So I've had to do it again. But like Apple Watch or Apple Pay on the watch is just ridiculous. I mean, and every time I do it, either the people at Walgreens or if I go through the drive-thru or something, it dumbfounds them every time. So I feel like something like that is pretty cool. And obviously they haven't seen Android Wear doing that because it's like a first time. They say, I've never seen anything like that. So I feel like that's another positive. But
yeah, I think that's a good point, Stephen. And if you couple that with the fact that some 3,500 apps came out with developers who did not have watches to test
it
on.
Right.
That's pretty impressive, that alone. And so to think about how the improvements and the optimizations they're going to be able to make, and then leveraging, now that they have the hardware, leveraging that hardware to its full potential, I think there's some really exciting things down the road.
Well, you guys are going to make me cry because unfortunately, I'm in Canada and we have no Apple Pay here.
Oh, that's right.
So I have been waiting to be able to use Apple Pay on my watch.
Yes.
And no, I forgot about that. To yet.
I know it's the same thing with Renee because he doesn't.
We have all the NFC chips. We have everything already ready for Apple Pay here.
Right.
Like I've been able to, I can take my credit card and just tap it and be able to pay. So we're already set up, and there's no Apple Pay here at all. Not watch, not at all.
I'm so sorry.
So very sad. I'm waiting.
Well, one day it will be a magical experience for
well,
you.
Well, I'm so happy that you guys are enjoying it so much.
It was cool. And,
it is really cool.
And even like Joanna Stern in her review of the watch, she said, you know, one of the coolest experiences was she went for a run, left her phone at home. She had Bluetooth headphones, so she was able to listen to her music from the watch, no other devices. On her run, she went to Whole Foods, bought something with her Apple Watch with Apple Pay, and was able to go back home. And like that, this whole thing was very freeing and a cool experience. So,
see, I didn't know that you could also use Apple Pay from your watch without your phone within the 30 feet.
Yeah, no, actually, you don't even need to have your phone with you, right, Stephen?
Right,
you
can, not at all. It's funny because
I'm even more upset now.
Because when I
so amazing.
We better stop talking about Apple Pay. Amazing. We want to keep Georgia on this on this podcast.
It just makes life so much easier. I hate having to take out my credit card and find things. So.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it will work without your phone because when you set up your watch, all your passbook stuff moves over, if you notice, like your Starbucks stuff or whatever. But no Apple Pay cards are set up even when you pair with your phone. And you have to pair each card with the watch separately as you would as if it were a new phone. And the watch information is stored on the secure element on the watch.
That's correct. Yeah.
So the phone can be, you know, across the country and you can still use Apple Pay. So, well, hopefully you get to experience that soon, Georgia. Sorry about that.
Yeah. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's my hardship.
I think it's also going to be interesting. You know, obviously, I don't think a lot of, you know, teenagers and younger people have Apple Watches just yet, as they just came out. But it was a bizarre experience for me. I went to a flute convention. My wife plays flute. And at this flute convention, it was basically all teenage girls, like between the ages of 12 and 17. And I thought I was a pretty techie person. And when I was at this convention, seeing these young ladies use their iPhones and smartphones, it just boggled my mind. Like the speed at which they do things and how they use the devices is totally different than how I do it. And it really took me back. So I'm going to be real curious how younger age demographics interact with the watch. And maybe digital touch will be more of, and like sending heartbeats and stuff like that will be more, useful to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a feeling that'll take a while because I think that the price points for the watch are just a little bit out of their range. And so it's going to have to be a really special event or occasion or Christmas or whatever, you know, a special holiday for them to be able to get it. It's not to say that I don't think they'll want it. You know, I mean, my daughter, when I got mine, she was kind of peeking over going, so what does it do? And she was curious and played around with it for a little bit. And so she's definitely interested in it just because she loves her iPhone. So I think that halo effect will happen. I just think it may be, you know, some time before, you know, either whether the price points come down or just there's just more attainable at key times or seasonal times is when they'll be able to get a hold of it.
So, Georgia, I know you're so up on the watch, so I'm curious, you know, obviously third-party apps and there are other things that could be fixed. What is it that bothers you about the watch that you wish were different right now?
There are a few things that bug me about the watch. It is a little bit difficult to interface with Siri. So, like, I'll say, you know, I'll lift up the watch and I'll be like, hey, Siri, you know, call this. And so, like, I think that what the watch doesn't do everything, which is fine with me, but what it does, it should do well.
Yeah.
And the only way for me to make a phone call if I'm, say, like driving and I don't want to use my Bluetooth is to be able to do that. And so I think that should get a little bit better, how to call up Siri without having to double press, which you can do as well. But the cool part is me being able to talk to my watch and it just kind of replies.
Right.
And so I think that that's good. And I think that they have to work on the accuracy of the, here, I'm going to try it, the photoplethysmography on the watch, so that it's a little bit more accurate, which, again, in time they'll be able to, you know, figure that out so that it's a little bit of a better algorithm. Because if I am working out and, you know, it, and it says that I wasn't working out, it does bug me a little.
Yeah, well,
I was like, no, really, I should get that little achievement. Where's my little gold 5-minute achievement?
Where's my parade? Yeah.
No, I want that.
I will say.
And that kind of puts people, like, you know, you end up getting this negative effect when you interact with something, expect something, and then don't get it.
Right. So one of the, when I wrote the review for Apple Insider, one of my biggest pain points was Siri, because I was very excited about to use Hey Siri without having to start anything, you know, because it works on the phone when it's plugged into power. But when you have the iPhone 6 Plus, that never happens during the day because the battery lasts all day. So I was looking forward to that. And that was the one thing, you know, it works maybe 60% of the time for me.
Right.
And it seems like if you're in an app or something, it doesn't work. Hey Siri has to be on watch face.
It's something strange. Like, so a tip for everyone, if you're trying to use it, you want to first turn on your watch before you say, Hey Siri. So you want to lift it up, see your watch face, or if you have it onto whatever application is playing, and then you start speaking and say, Hey Siri. And you have to then catch it in enough time that it's still on.
Right. Well, that's...
So, because if it turns off in the middle of you saying it, you have to restart as well.
Well, and what I did when I was trying to do it first, I would say, Hey Siri, I would wait for it to give me the taptic feedback, and then I would start talking. But that pause, it would always cut off what I was trying to say. And it was very frustrating because I'm like, you just told me to speak. Like, you just tapped me. Why did you stop? So I found it works best. Like, how I noticed how they do it in all the demos. Like, when Kevin Lynch demoed it on stage, you just say, Hey Siri, and you just talk. Like, you don't even... I don't even pause. I don't even pause anymore. And it doesn't even, Siri hasn't even come up yet, but I'm telling it what to do.
Yeah.
And somehow it catches up. Like, it catches up.
Yeah, it makes me feel worried though, because I'm always worried that here I am talking.
And no one's listening to me.
You know, I like to know that Siri's like listening. It's almost like having a conversation with someone. They're like, are you listening to me?
Is there a deeper issue there in Georgia? No, I'm just kidding.
You're going to do this for me or not?
Yeah, and that's why I love, you know, at least Siri on the phone, especially when you want to send a message, it'll say, are you ready to send? Or it'll, you know, it could read it back to you if you need it to. And that's something I miss that on the watch, you know, because just to send a message, you still can't do it with only voice. You do have to tap the screen to send it. And you can't go back or anything. So Siri was my biggest pain point, I think, because I was most looking forward to it on the phone.
Plus, it's one of the main ways in which you interface with the watch.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And especially like trying to tap an app, like on the app home screen, if you have a ton of them, can be a pain. But Siri can launch them really well. So a lot of times I'll say, Hey Siri, launch Overcast, and it goes right to it. And that's...
You see, but I forget the names of my applications.
Yeah. And I did,
right? I understand some of them, you know just what they are, like launch Shazam or something. But some of them I'm like, I don't, like, you know, what do I call that one? I don't know.
Right. And I use Pocket Casts as an app, but I've been using Overcast because it's the only one with a watch app. So for the first couple of times I would say, Siri, launch Pocket Casts, and it wouldn't do anything. I get mad at it, but it's because it's not on the watch. So I think it needs to work. I also think, you know, the glances, some of them are pretty useful, but Jim,
Which are the ones that you find useful?
Exactly. So I loved, you know, I almost find them more useful as shortcuts to the apps that I want to use. Because like I love the Dark Sky app on the watch. So I would almost use the glance as a shortcut to get to it, because you can just tap the glance and launch it. Because the glance itself would take a while to load and it wouldn't be useful, but it's useful as a shortcut. And Jim, being a UX designer, I was curious if you had any thoughts on this, but I find like I have some glances here, like I have a CNN headline app, I have my calendar glance, so I see my next event. And again, some of them are nice, but like to navigate it, if you're on the far right glance and you want to get all the way to the left, you look like a crazy person, just like frantically waving your hand on the watch, trying to scroll through them all. So I feel like, one, yes, they could be improved, but two, there needs to be a better way to actually access them quickly or shuffle through them quickly. Because like the notification center on the iPhone, when you have widgets, you know, you have a big screen, you can see multiple widgets at a time. It's not that much work to scroll up and down through your widgets, but for the glances, it can be kind of a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I limit my glances to just 5 screens. So told myself after using it for the first couple of weeks, or no, it hasn't been a couple of weeks, first, you know, 5 or 6 days, I decided, you know what, this is not helpful for me to go to the bottom, you know, swipe up and having to go, okay, is it the 7th one, 8th one, 10th one? I mean, and having to swipe back and forth to find it. So I decided, you know what, 4 or 5, maybe max 6, you know, glances that I kind of have over time, keep them the same order, and then I'll know where they are and not to have more than that. So my tendency right now, and this may change, is not to place a lot of apps down there as far as glances are concerned, but access the apps themselves if I want the information, and then just keeping the bare minimum of being able to, you know, put my watch to sleep or to, you know, to not disturb, or I do have the Move, rather the, you
activity.
Know, the Move rings on there. And then controls to the music if I have a podcast playing on it. So I just limit it to those few things so that it's manageable to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually talking about like playing things off of your watch. That's the one thing that I was quite disappointed in. I had expected that I would be able to like stream the music from my phone and have it play on my watch. Like I assumed that I had to be within range because it's actually going to be stored upon my phone.
Right.
But just like listening to a phone call and I can hear it on my watch, I thought that I could do that with music as well. And I was sad when I'm like, oh great, I'm going to play some music, and I'm like, wait, but it's not coming through the cruddy watch, you know?
Yeah. No, it's not.
System. I'm like, why is that not? That cannot happen. I'm and like, I want it to stream.
My son was playing with it, and he hit the now playing play button, and my phone was like in the other room, and it started talking because a podcast was on there. I was like, what in the world? And I didn't realize. So it's that is
so
a little bizarre.
You have to use your headphones if you want some Bluetooth headphones, and then it will play on the headphones. But
correct.
And I guess how often would you want it to play on your watch? I don't know.
It's just it's a weird, like, it's a degree of removal from like you're pressing play on the watch and it's playing something else.
Yeah.
So I totally get that. I was listening to you again on a twit, and I thought it was funny how you do not like the Mickey clock face. I thought that was hilarious. I don't either.
You don't either. Is he not alone?
Because it was like every Apple person was paid to say they like the Mickey watch face. I mean, Kevin Lynch said it in everything, and I think Tim Cook said it. And I'm like, listen, you don't all like it. One of you is lying. You don't all like the Mickey watch face. I totally get that. But someone yesterday asked me, like, hey, have you tried the Mickey watch face? I was like, no, but let me try it. I'll show you. And it was like 4 p.m., like 4:40 or something like that. And when I went to the Mickey watch face, it was just a garble of limbs. Like, his two arms were down by his feet, and you can't see anything. You can't see what numbers they're pointing to. And I'm like, this is the worst watch ever. It blocks the entire view of the numbers. So I'm with you, George. I don't get the Mickey watch face.
Yeah, he's just not. It's just not my thing. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I guess he's cute. I don't know.
No, he's not even cute.
My wife likes the Mickey watch face, and
I'm sorry.
But there's one reason why she loves Disney. She would retire and work at Disney if she could. And so I think that affinity to Disney just gives her reason to like the watch face. But yeah, I'm with you both. I don't find it. I mean, I'm a little more utilitarian as far as I want to see additional information too. And so some of the other watch faces just seem to lend themselves a little better to the way I want to see things. I mean, it's cute. It's something to, I guess, show off for a moment, but not to have as my permanent watch face.
And when I discovered,
which watch faces do you each use?
Right, that was my next question. I do like the fact that you can delete clock faces totally. It's like the Mickey doesn't even show up when I try to choose a watch face.
You can
swipe up and delete them. So I mean, you can literally swipe and delete all the ones that are stock and just have your customized ones, which I've done. So that's nice when you want to switch to just the ones that you like. I liked the motion for a while, just the jellyfish, because it looked pretty.
I did have the jellyfish for a little while as well.
And I liked the astronomy with the globe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that looks very
really
good.
Cool.
So I use those when I'm not needing a lot of information. I like the utility a lot. Basically just the hands and the dashes, But I work in the travel industry, so it's nice having a world clock so I can have Middle Eastern time on there. Mm-hmm. And I have my next event. So I like the utility most of the time. And when I have a lot of events during a day, I like the modular to have the next event big in the middle of the screen.
Yeah, that's the one thing I like. I like the utility because of that, because you can have, you know, what is your next thing that's on your list right on your wrist, so you're not going to forget it.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
I also like, I was dressed up a little bit the other day, and I went with the simple clock face, and I stripped everything off of it, and it just has the hands, and they're white. So when I lift my watch, it stayed as a completely black face with just the second, minute, and hour hand in white. And I thought that was pretty slick.
So it looks really stylish, yeah.
Yeah.
It was very chic. I just wouldn't know what time it was all the time.
Yeah, neither did I. I didn't care. I just wanted
to
look cool.
Is it 7? Is it 8? I don't know. It could be it's somewhere.
I don't know how to tell time, I guess. But Jim, what do you like to use?
Oh my gosh, Stephen, I don't know. I have much to offer here, because it's what you said is almost exactly how I use my watch. So I love utility. That's probably where I'm at about, 70% of the time. Yeah. I'll switch over to modular if I want to see what's next right up front. Usually when I'm working, those are the two I use. And then if it's casual, I'm out and about, I might switch over to like the Jellyfish, or I might switch over to the Globe one, or the Astronomy one. But very similar use cases as far as I'm concerned with what you do.
I was a little disappointed in myself. I thought I would love to be able to use the analog clock faces more often, and I just can't tell the time quick enough for my taste. Like I was not a watch wearer previously.
That's why you have the watch to think for you.
Oh, that's very true.
No, it's true. I know. Calculate.
Right. And I was not a watch wearer previously. So I was not been used to, seeing analog, hands. So I like seeing the digital ones when I just really need to get things done, I guess,
But, wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I did grow up with watches, so I can kind of read them relatively quickly. But and so I do prefer them, because just from growing up, I just, love some of the, analog watches that I've had, and Cartier and some other ones. But I like them. I prefer that, and that's the one I have the most. And then I'll switch over to the kind of straightforward utility one the modular one when I just want the data in front of me.
Yeah. Well, Georgia, how about you? What do you keep it on?
So I started off, I was really excited with the butterflies.
Okay. it's very cool.
I was so excited. Yeah. You're going to have a butterfly. It's going to flutter.
Yeah.
I was upset that every time you raise your hand, it's a different butterfly, which it was cool and sad at the same time.
You
I was
wanted
like,
consistency.
I don't like this butterfly. I'm going to lower my hand and raise it again so I get the butterfly that I want. And so I was with a butterfly at first, and then I went to the Jellyfish. I tried the flowers for a little while. They didn't interest me. The Jellyfish were kind of cool.
Yeah.
And now I was on the utility at first, but I could not change the colors to what I wanted it to be.
You're limited.
Oh, it's just the second hand, right, that you can change the color on, I believe, on the utility one?
And the date number. So what are you on now?
So now I'm using color. So I end up getting to choose 4 different accessories to that, things that are going to be on the watch face as well.
I have
like the battery life of my phone, temperature, a time in another location, my activity monitor, and a stopwatch, which is great because you can click on all of those and they open the applications. So that's just my quick open the application that I may need to want to open anyways without having to find it on my watch or use Siri.
Yeah. And on the, I think the latest talk show, Gruber was talking about, it'd be nice if when there's like, if you have an event complication or if you have a timer complication on the watch, when it's just showing zeros or when there's no event, like it would either just disappear or say something else. Because like some will just say no events. And it's like, it's kind of ugly to have on a clock face to just say no events. So
And you might not want anyone to know that you're not busy, because, they'd be you'd be like, do you want to go out? And you'd be like, no, I don't want to. They're like, but there's no event on your watch. Like, oh,
exactly.
Totally. I just didn't mark it down.
Instant accountability. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And thing with the motion one, too, I had it on the Jellyfish for a while, and I wanted to show people. Yeah. You know, like, hey, check this out. But when I would pull my watch up, like, it would take so long for the Jellyfish to appear and to float around.
They're hiding.
Yeah, they would get disinterested, and they'd be like, yeah, okay, whatever. No, it's cool. So,
it's a butterfly. They appear almost immediately.
Yeah. Well, I felt funny with a butterfly on my wrist. My kids like to rotate the globe and stuff with the digital crown, though, on the astronomy one.
Am I the only one that tried to zoom in?
I tried to zoom in because it shows your location, so it looks like a map.
Let's get closer. If I could zoom in onto the globe, that would be it for me.
There have been a couple of times where I try to zoom in on something and nothing, and it just doesn't. Right. And like, well, even when you're on like the app screen, I was hoping you could zoom in farther so all the app things are bigger, but it eventually just launches an app if you just keep zooming in. And I'm like, well, I just want them all bigger. Like, I don't care if I have to scroll more. I just want them bigger so I can see them better. But anyway. Right. Yeah. So anyway, all right. Well, Georgia, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you if they want more?
You can find me on imore.com, and also you can find me on Twitter. It's @Georgia_Dow.
Very cool. And Jim, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter as well, Jim Young. They can reach me there and communicate that way.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much.